Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this Saturday, November 20th, 2010. I'll be taking you for the next 58 minutes as we run a little late here, 58 minutes to the bottom half, to the top of the 11 o'clock hour. And we will begin with the best rivalry in all the sports right now in terms of individuals going at it, individuals within a team concept, so to speak. And that is, of course, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, the two best quarterbacks in the league. Who's best? Who's the best? Well, it depends on who, you know, depends on your flavor of the month, so to speak, or your flavor of the week. And certainly is a question that we are going to that we'll get into as the show goes along. That we'll certainly get into you know, throughout the course of the show. But when you look at these two guys, I know that every year it seems like, you know, the quote-unquote experts want to crown a new quarterback and put them in the class in the same league of these guys, whether it be Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, realistically speaking, these guys are, you know, they're the class by themselves. I mean, now, I like Roethlisberger is the closest to these guys. As far as, you know, accomplishments, ability, the total package, he's the closest. He's right, you know, I think he's right on that fringe. But these guys still are, you know, when you think about the two best, these guys are still, you know, still to me stand alone as far as what they can do, as far as what they've accomplished. And to me, right as of right now, there's been no slowing down with either of them. Of course, they'll play this weekend against each other, and we'll get into that game as we head into our Week 11 picks. But right now, Brady, I would think, along with Michael Vick, would be the co-MVPs of the league. And Peyton Manning is not that far behind. I mean, he would be top three or four in terms of MVP voting right now. He might even be the MVP in some circles. So neither one of them has slowed down. There hasn't been any decline. The reason why I wanted to center the show around them is ESPN came out with an article in where they tried to gauge these two against each other through about 15 categories, which I think is a little bit much for me. I mean, it's 15 categories, and classic ESPN fashion. I mean, of course, you can't take it seriously because they had five panelists, and four of them were not even quarterbacks. I mean, Tim Hasselbeck was the only quarterback. You had Bill Williamson, who's a scout, Eric Allen, Marcellus Wiley, and I'm trying to think of the other guy. It was another defensive player that they had who were the judges, so to speak, in terms of gauging the categories. Had 15 categories, they had Peyton Manning. They had Peyton Manning being better than Tom Brady in 11 out of 15 categories, which to me is ridiculous. If you're going to say that, then it's not even a debate. You have 15 categories, you have one guy who's superior in 11 of them. I mean, why even do this debate at that? If it's going to be that one-sided. So, but it did give me the thinking, really, who is the best out of these two iconic quarterbacks, these two future Hall of Famers, living legends of the game right now? And I get that. So here's the panelists the esteemed talents that chose this. It was Eric Allen, of course, who was a tremendous player in his own right, defensive back, quarterback for the Eagles and Raiders and Saints back in the day. Herm Edwards, the coach, the Hasselbeck was the only quarterback. Matt Williamson, who was a former scout for the Cleveland Browns, and Marcellus Wiley, who was a decent player, you know, over the course of his career, has become better on TV than he ever was on the field, to be honest with you. So, you know, I can't take this list seriously because the more how one-sided it is, and it makes zero sense. Number two, to me, I want quarterbacks talking about quarterbacks. You got one quarterback, and then he was a backup at that, Tim Hasselbeck. You know, give me a panel of Elway, Montana, Phil Simms, Troy Aikman, Fran Tarkenton. Give me guys who were former quarterbacks who still closely follow the game. I mean, you're getting me these guys right here. You know, come on, Herm Edwards, Eric Allen. We know they know football, but I want quarterbacks. So they had their own panel and had, you know, 15 different categories. Some of the categories were just what are you talking about? Others were pretty good, but again, I paid basically no attention to it. I looked through it, but to me it didn't tell me anything. So I had my own set of categories when it came to engaging Brady and Manning. I had as far as talent, intangibles, and game management. And again, as the course of the show goes along, I will tell you where I stood at with in terms of how I engaged both Brady and Manning, who again, to me, are still at the top of their games. And are still clearly the two best quarterbacks in football right now. And again, this is, you know, this is the greatest individual rivalry in sports right now, and without question, the greatest quarterback rivalry in the NFL history. I know there's a lot of talk about Bart Starr and Johnny Unitas, you know, back in the 50s and late 50s, or like in back in the 50s and 60s, mostly the 60s. But you look at how many times these guys have met, what they've accomplished, what they've done. This is, I would say, in terms of ability, I think both of these guys are better than Star and Unitas, to be honest with you. This thing stands alone. So we'll get to that over the course of the game, over the course of the of the show, and also get into picks. We'll get into NFL picks in a couple segments. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back with Saturday Morning Headlines. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Real Quick, taking you to the top, the 11 o'clock hour, 11 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. Here is your Saturday morning headlines. Sources report that Derek Jeter has been offered a 3-year, $45 million contract by the New York Yankees. And you say, wow, that's a lot of money. But it's a lot of money, but maybe not to Derek Jeter, who allegedly wants a five to six year deal worth $20 million a year. So he basically wants $100 million. All right, okay. Derek Jeter, who will be 37 come June. It's still a pretty good player, but you don't build your team. You know, when you give guys $100 million contracts, those are guys who, to me, are franchise players. Those are guys who you are trying to build your team around. Derek Jeter is no longer that guy. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Derek Jeter is still a tremendous leader. Plays hard every day, shows up every game, you know, will hit in the postseason, but he is no longer a guy who, you know, is going to command that kind of salary. I mean, to be honest with you, I said this, you know, about when I was looking at it like 10 or 11 years ago, you know, when he first signed his, he's very fortunate in terms of signing what he got in his first contract with the $189 million 10-year deal. Because to me, he's never been that kind of player. You know, for all, you know, get 3,000 hits, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but he's never been, you know, he's been overpaid basically his entire career. I mean, think about that contract. $189 million for 10 years. That is, I mean, that's the kind of money that you would give Albert Pujols or Barry Bonds when they were in his prime, or Manny Ramirez in his prime. You know, Alex Rodriguez, so to speak. Yeah, I mean, as good as Derek Jeter has been, you can't take away from his leadership. You can't catch him with some of what he's done. I mean, he's better. He has more talent than people realize, than people give credit for. He's more than just a guy who is good in terms of intangibles, making with the plays. He's better than that. But with that said, he is not a franchise, all-time great player. And he views himself still as that player. And I'll get into this a little bit more when we go through React quotes. We have some interesting quotes from the Yankees brass on this. But, again, he's trying to get paid off, you know, he's trying to make money off the pass. Bottom line is all there is to it. And, again, the Steinbrenners, Hal and Hank, Ray Levine, that Yankee brass, they're not going to cave in to Derek Jeter. So, then again, this thing can get ugly real fast. We'll see how it progresses over the course of the next coming weeks. The SEC has suspended Tennessee Volunteer head men's basketball coach Bruce Pearl for 8 games. Of course, Pearl lied to the NCAA a couple months back. Not only lied to the NCAA, not only violated the NCAA rules, he lied, he misled the NCAA in terms of their investigation. So, he's suspended for the first 8 games of the SEC season, which is, to me, a slap on the wrist. I mean, for what he did, he could have easily been suspended for the entire season. And if Mike Slive, who is the SEC commissioner, wanted to show some guts, he would have suspended Pearl for the entire season, and including the NCAA tournament. You know, this going halfway, slap on the wrist, it's like... I don't know. It's like putting a kid on timeout who deserves to be on punishment. Probably one of the better analogies I can use. And it's a slap on the wrist. It's nothing. And I know I say 8 games in a college basketball season. Yeah, that's a third of the season. But again, he'll be back for the rest of the regular season. He'll be back for the conference tournament. And he'll be back for the NCAA tournament if Tennessee makes it that far. So, you know. You know, he still can bounce back from this. And so this is not, I don't think that they're doing anything that's unprecedented. They're sending a message. I don't think they're sending a message at all. So, well, you'll see how that works out. As the investigation is still ongoing, so there's a chance that Tennessee could still have NCAA violations against them. It can be dealt with some probation. So we'll see how that goes. we'll see how that goes over the course of this season. Again, that this situation is not over with. And but again, so if you're gonna suspend somebody or try to send a message, go all the way. Because it's evident and clear when you're trying to, you know, when you do a slap on the wrist, it's very clear. So if you're gonna do it, go all the way and don't hold back. So those are your Saturday morning headlines on this Saturday, November 20th, 2010. We'll be right back with Week 11 picks in the league, where no contract is guaranteed. Welcome back to News Radio. This is Undecided Morning What's Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you to the top of the 11 o'clock and bottom. Excuse me, the top of the 11 o'clock hour. Week number 11 in the league where no contract is guaranteed. Showdown Sunday. A lot of good games. We will begin with Oakland at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a 7-point favorite. Of course, Pittsburgh is coming off that shellacking at the hands of the New England Patriots. Pittsburgh lost Oakland last year and was trying to avoid the same fate that they had when they started out 6-2 a year ago. Right now they're 6-3. They're still leading their division, or tied, I should say, with the Baltimore Ravens for their division lead, and right there as far as a team that can. They have a chance to have the best record in the AFC. Pittsburgh has some issues, though. Their defense has not played well. Over the last four games, they've given up 20 points or more. In the first five, the most points they had given up was 14. Taking on a hot Oakland team who's been running all over everybody. Oakland has the number two rushing attack in the league behind Yeah, you can't see Chiefs. McFadden has been great. Jason Campbell has been steady. Oakland 5-4, feeling good about themselves. But the problem with Oakland in this game, as you add with them winning this game, is the fact that they don't throw the ball all over the place. Pittsburgh is still a stout defense against the run. The best in the league, only giving them about 62 yards a game. The way you go at Pittsburgh is throwing the ball. You know, Pittsburgh, they're giving up 250 yards passing, you know, a game. So that's how you attack. That's how you go at Pittsburgh. I like Pittsburgh to win this game. I like them to bounce back. But I will say that 7 points is a bit much considering how they're playing. I know they're at home. I can see Oakland keeping this game close. This game, to me, will be within a touchdown, tough fourth quarter. So I see somewhere like a 24-20 game. A 24-20, a 28-24, that type of game. I think there'll be some points on the board in this game because, I think Pittsburgh's defense is vulnerable right now. So, remember, they have no Aaron Smith. Brett Kiesel is out as well. So that is not the same defense that we saw early on in September. In late October, mid October, that was dominating people. That seemed to be headed towards one of those, you know, typical great Pittsburgh defenses. Is not the case, but again, they will still find a way to get past the Oakland Raiders, who are playing well in a close game. Take Oakland the points, Pittsburgh to win the game. Game number two, the Arizona Cardinals travel to Arrowhead Stadium to take on Kansas City. Kansas City is 7.5 point favorites. Arizona, Kansas City was absolutely embarrassed last week, you know, and losing to the Denver Broncos in a game that they did not show up. I expect a big time bounce back performance from the Chiefs. They're going up against an Arizona defense that can stop the run. I just mentioned earlier that the Chiefs are number one in the league when running the ball with Thomas Jones and, of course, Jamal Charles. Jones has played very well this year. And Matt Castle quietly is having a big time year. Remember, he got to the slow start, and people were saying, well, he's the weak link of the team. Not any longer. Castle will now look up 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. This game, I think this game is going to get ugly very fast. Arizona's quarterback situation is a mess. You know, they should have never got rid of Matt Leinart. Now that it turns out, they've handled the quarterback situation as bad as you could possibly handle it. Derek Anderson is in, but he's not. He's stuck this year. I like Kansas City, again, 31-14. I think they bounce back in a big way, cover the spread, and just outright have their way with the Arizona Cardinals. Game number three, Tampa Bay travels to San Francisco. San Francisco is favored by a field goal. I like San Francisco in this game. Mike Williams, the Tampa Bay receiver, was caught. He was busted for driving while intoxicated. He will play. Are you surprised? In today's NFL, these guys are not going to be suspended for that. So he will play. But to me, it won't matter. I think even though he's played well this season, I think San Francisco, the Tampa Bay is catching San Francisco at the wrong time. I think San Francisco is playing much better football. They're a different team than what we saw earlier in the season. Singletary has got them motivated again. Troy Smith has provided a spark. Played great last week against the Rams. Also brought them back against Denver a couple of weeks ago when they were in London. So they've won two straight. They amazingly, they're still there. They are in the thick of that division race. As far as they're a game and a half behind the Seattle Seahawks at 3-6. Excuse me, two games at 3-6. Seattle, of course, is 5-4. Really, three games to Seattle beat them. So they're still amazingly getting off to that horrible start. They're still within striking distance of that division. I think they will win game number four against Tampa Bay. And again, Tampa Bay has been good in these spots, beat teams that they should beat this year. But again, I think they're catching a hot San Francisco team. I like San Francisco in a close game. Look for San Francisco to cover in a 21-17 type game. This will be a defensive game. So far we have Oakland with the points, but Pittsburgh winning the game, Kansas City winning outright and covering the point, and covering, and San Francisco winning outright and also covering the points. When we come back, we will look at the two headliner games, Philly, New York, and of course the big one Sunday afternoon, Indianapolis at New England. We will be right back. Welcome back to this list. This is another Saturday morning wake-up call, 27 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. New York travels to Philadelphia to take on the hot Eagle offense, which is still probably trying to cool off from Monday night's thrashing of the Washington Redskins. The Eagles come in as 3-point favorites over the Giants. This is going to be a classic. There will be a lot of points put on the board. I don't see how either one of these defenses stops the other offense. I know the Giants have an excellent pass rush, good secondary, but the way Michael Vick is playing right now, it really doesn't matter. I mean, if he's going to make throws from the pocket with accuracy, you know, you can't just, I don't see how any way that you can stop him from running. And you can put a spy on, to me, you know, putting a spy on him is like playing 12 against 10 because that spy cannot run with them either. That spy, you might as well just play your conventional defense. And, to me, a spy is just a waste. Yeah, you know where he's going, but you know what? Can you get there before he gets there? No. I mean, the Redskins tried to do it with LeVar Landry, and they got destroyed. There's not a player fast enough on the field that you're going to put on that can stay with him without just destroying your defense. And you can't put your top quarterback or even your nickel quarterback, at that matter, on Michael Vick to see where he's going to be. And forget about a safety or a linebacker. I mean, that's comical. So, again, I expect a lot of points. The Giants will put points on the board in this game as well. Giants have been explosive offensively in their own right. Eli Manning is having does have 13 interceptions, but has thrown for a ton of yardage, has completed a high percentage of his passes, and has 19 touchdowns. The problem with the Giants is that they are too turnover prone. Eli with the interceptions, with the fumbles, you cannot turn over the ball against this Eagle offense. You have to win the turnover battle playing the Eagles. Again, I expect the Eagles to win a high-scoring matchup, 41-31. There will be a lot of points put on the board. And the thing to watch out for the Eagles is, everybody talks about Vic with him throwing. The Eagles are killing teams because of their running game. Eagles come into this game averaging over 151 yards rushing a game, which is third in the NFL behind Oakland and Kansas City. And, again, the reason why they average so much is obviously Vic gets his yards rushing. But, teams are losing gap control and gap discipline because of the threat of Michael Vick. So LeSean McCoy has, free reign basically to run wherever he wants. You saw Jerome Harrison have a 50-yard run last week against the Redskins. That is, to me, the biggest impact that Vick is having is on that Eagle running game. Because remember, this is an Eagle running game that has been non-existent for the better part of the last Andy Reid's tenure. I mean, he likes to pass. Basically, the guy who wants to pass is 60% of the time. So, Eagles have been very good in terms of running the football. That is in large part due to one Michael Vick. Game of the week, Indianapolis at New England. New England is favored by 3.5. All these games always go down to the wire when these two teams play. Last year, of course, 35-34, Indianapolis, the controversial 4th-and-2 called by Bill Belichick that would have iced the game, but he chose to go for it on his side of the field, fearing that Peyton Manning, that he could not stop Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning would have gone on to score. But it didn't work. Indianapolis gets the ball back and scores and wins the game by one. Again, this game will be dictated by the offenses. Neither one of these defenses are any good. New England, and this is why I think Brady is the MVP. You look at the numbers he's putting up with a average running game and basically with a mediocre defense. That defense ranks in the bottom half of just about every major category known to man, and they still have the best record in football. To me, the difference in this game is I think that Indianapolis is too banged up as far as their personnel, defensively and offensively, for that matter. You know, they have Austin Collie is still a question mark. We know about you know about Dallas Clark and Anthony Gonzalez and the running backs. Their situation. They have so many injuries on both sides of the ball. I still think this game will be close, but I like New England in a close game, say 28-24. So I think they'll cover this. I think they will cover 28-24. You know, I can see 30-24, that type of game, 30-27. This is a game that will be dictated by the offenses. I don't think both defenses really have a chance against these offenses, and it definitely will come down to a fourth quarter, one possession game. Late in the fourth quarter per se. So I like it I like New England in a close game to take out Indianapolis and snap that losing streak that they have against the Colts. They have not beaten the Colts since 2007. Of course, that was the year when New England was had a perfect regular season before losing to the Giants in the Super Bowl. So I have Oakland with the points, Pittsburgh to win the game. Kansas City to win and the points outright. San Francisco to win and cover the spread and cover the Giant. Philadelphia to win and cover as well. And New England to win and cover also. So those are your picks on this week 11 edition of NFL Picks on the Saturday morning wake-up call. We'll be right back with React quotes. And also, to come, Tiger Woods. We'll talk again to a little Tiger Woods as well. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. 36 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, as we get into the second half of the program, we'll go into some React quotes, some quotes to me that stood out over the course of the week. And I'll begin with one that, will sound familiar. Will sound familiar if you are a New York Yankees fan. Tell him. The deal is 3 years at $15 million a year. Take it or leave it. The person taking the hard line approach said, wait him out and he'll wind up taking it. Where's he going to go? Cincinnati? and of course, it sounded like, in the article stage, it sounded like that. That sounded like a classic Hank Steinbrenner quote. And Hank does not talk on the record anymore. Yankees don't let him. But that's, let's be honest. That was Hank Steinbrenner, clearly. And here's another one. Derek Jeter is a great Yankee. He's a great player. With that said and done, now is a different negotiation than 10 years ago. That was Randy Levine. And to me, that is the key quote. You have to understand, okay? And to me, and that fuels my point that I believe that the Yankees think that the contract that he received the first time was too much. And that, you know, and that not only is it 11 years later, I mean, that was 1999, all right, it's 2010. Not only is it 11 years later, you know, that contract was just not ridiculous, but he was overpaid. He was overpaid. Now, again, it didn't come, he was overpaid in the standpoint that so many good things happened for the Yankees, and he had so many accomplishments and things, it really didn't show how much he was overpaid. But let's be honest with you, he was never, you give a guy $189 million for 10 years, again, that is a franchise-type guy. That's what you give a top pitcher in baseball. That's what you give, that's what you give Roy Halladay. That's what you give, you know, Roger Clemens in his prime. Derek Jeter is not on that. He's not an immortal, and he's not an all-time great in terms of his skill level. So I think that this faction, this Yankee brass is clearly not going to give him that kind of money. 3 years, $15 million a year, $45 million is a more than fair offer. A more than fair offer for Derek Jeter at this point in his career. And again, also some of this is triggered also by A-Rod, who has a contract into his 40s. When A-Rod's contract is up, he'll be 42. So he also wants to match with A-Rod. He also wants to match what A-Rod is getting as far as not so much money, but in terms of years. I'm telling you right now, the Yankees are not going to give in to Derek Jeter. I don't care what the fans say. And any fan who believes that they should, they need to be drug tested. You know, Jeter was once a top shortstop. He was once a great player. Those days are done. We talked about it earlier, he's going to be 37 years old, and I'm not giving $20 million a year to a 37-year-old shortstop that's going to go out there and give me 10 home runs and 50 and 60 RBIs. It's not going to happen. And I would dare, and I said, you see the Yankees, what was said in that quote, I would dare Derek Jeter to sign with somebody else. First of all, nobody in baseball is going to even give him, I don't think we'd give him even $15 million a year for 3 years. I think if he goes out on the market, the most years he's going to get maybe is a 2-year deal, maybe a third year as an option year, but the Yankees are guaranteeing him 3 years, $45 million. And again, that is a more than fair offer. Yankee fans are going to whistle moan. You know, he's the captain. He's done this. He's done that. You know, he made this play. He made that play. You know what? Yankees are looking at it like the NFL. What have you done for me lately? How old are you right now? How many more years do you have realistically left at a all-star caliber level? Because really, you were the all-star this year. You made the all-star in terms of your popularity. You want to go glove in terms of your popularity. There's no way that you should want to go glove this year. I mean, are you kidding me? So, again, he's not great. He's good. He's just not great anymore. He said he shouldn't be. He's almost 37 years old. So, again, I like the audit. The Yankees are making more than a fair offer. Those same Yankee fans who criticize the Yankees for making this offer will be the same ones who will criticize them if they are to give him $100 million and he goes out there and stinks up the joint for the next 2 or 3 years. So keep that in mind as well. Get me back out there. I can do this one more time. That is Bill Parcells, who, in an article, who in a special produced by NFL Films that's going to be running on the NFL Network, a documentary-type deal, Parcells wants to clearly get back into football, not as a coach, but in a, you know, front office-type position, a CEO, vice president-type position, that president of, you know, he wants to run an organization just like he was the Miami Dolphins. You know, Parcells can't retire. I mean, Parcells is just, you know, he's a lifer. Again, I don't think he will never coach again. I believe him with that because of his health and, you know, 69 years old. But as far as playing a team, building a team, he will be back in the game soon enough. Now, I believe that he's still on the contract with Miami as a, you know, as a consultant. I'm sure he can easily get out of that. That's not a problem. So if I'm a franchise, you know, I'm sending out feelers. So I'm sending out feelers saying, hey, Bill, how serious are you? This guy knows football. He can build a franchise. Listen, Miami was a joke before he got there. The Cowboys were a joke before he got there. Had Jerry Jones continue to let Bill Parcells do what he wanted to do, that team would have won a Super Bowl by now. I guarantee you. He had that team had the right direction, but, you know, Jerry Jones being Jerry Jones wants to bring it to Terrell Owens, and that was the beginning of the end of that relationship. So I would trust Bill Parcells in terms of knowing what it takes to build a championship caliber organization. He knows how to draft. He knows the kind of players that you need, and he's a guy that's only, he's going to get football players. He's not going to get these prima donnas. He's not going to get these guys who, you know, if he does get a prima donna, the prima donna can play. Equation point, Brandon Marshall. So if I'm another organization who needs front office help, I would send out feelers to see how serious Parcells is about making his so-called comeback to the front office. Still to come, we'll talk about Tiger Woods and we'll talk about the new Tiger Woods, and we'll also get to some more Manning and Brady as well on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Cyril Quinn taking you to the top of the 11 o'clock hour, 44 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Cyril Quinn taking to the top of the hour, 11 o'clock, 45 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. Of course, Tiger Woods has came out. He wants to reconnect with you guys, the fans. He wants to he wants to get closer to the fans. He wants to know their thoughts and No, he doesn't. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about the fans. He wants to reconnect with his money and his endorsements. Tiger Woods was on Mike and Mike yesterday, and I listened to the interview. And they couldn't ask about that particular night. It was off limits. It was already built in that ESPN was not going to ask him about what happened Thanksgiving night, which to me, I cannot do an interview with Tiger Woods and not ask what happened to Thanksgiving night. I'm serious. I'm not trying to knock Mike and Mike. They asked, other than those questions, they asked pretty decent and tough questions. Some of it was a little mushy. I mean, what are you thankful for? Come on. I can care less what Tiger Woods is thankful for at this point in time. But overall, the interview, didn't tell you much. You know, Tiger claims to be this new man. He has this new perspective on life. He's back on, you know, he's back with his core values. He's, you know, he's more of a family guy now, and he has a Twitter page, he has a Facebook, and so on and so on. The problem with Tiger is nobody will ever take you seriously, number one. Do your need one of his options. Either, if he doesn't start winning, then the public will never forget about what happened last Thanksgiving. Because to me, Tiger is not fooling anybody. It's not a coincidence that he comes out with all this stuff a year removed from the car accident and what have you. It's not a coincidence. You know, Tiger wants to make you forget that ever happened by coming out with a more fan friendly Tiger Woods. You know, I'm frankly not buying it. I wasn't buying it when he came out with that press conference. I'm definitely not buying it now. All Tiger Woods had to do, and again, he should have took the Kobe Bryant approach. Kobe Bryant has been a poster child on how to handle a catastrophic situation in your personal life. Come out, say, tell us what happened that night. And say, listen, I made a mistake, you know, and I'm trying to move on, and I'm trying to become a better person for it. Kobe Bryant came out after Eagle, Colorado, you know, denied the rape, which he turned out to be innocent of. He came out and said, listen, I cheated on my wife in hand, I was wrong, blah, blah, blah. Kobe Bryant recovered from that. Now he has the number one selling jersey in the NBA three or four years in running. That's all Tiger Woods had to do is tell us what happened Thanksgiving night. Either that or go out there and win a bunch of tournaments. Because right now he's not doing either one of them. The public will never, never forgive him or never fully forget about this until he either comes out, tells the truth, or goes out there and starts winning Grand Slams. It's either or. Other than that, this, you know, window dressing, this trying to manufacture his image, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. I mean, the sports fan, the public is pretty smart. They are not naive at all. You know, the public reads all these tabloids. The sports fan is more sophisticated than ever, and they're not fooled by this whole charade. You know, him coming out, you know, with the Twitter. You know, I mean, it's me. You guys are awesome. Thanks for the support. Nobody cares about that. Yeah, of course he's gonna get followers. I mean, he's Tiger Woods, so he'll probably have 10 million followers. That's not the point. Again, nobody is buying this new Tiger Woods. I mean, nobody. Win some tournaments. You know, I don't know which part is gonna come back first, his image or his game, because both of them are hurting right now. You know, he can end this once and for all if he comes out there and says what happened that night. Because if he says that, then the focus is going to shift towards his golf game. Then, you know, we've put that to the bed. We've exhausted that. That's over. That's said and done. It's over and done with. Because if he comes out and says what happens, then the media has nothing to speculate anymore. It's always out there. You know, when Kobe Bryant came out and said that he cheated on his wife, you know, there was no more speculation. Even though you already knew it based on the fact that he was with the girl in Eagle, Colorado. He didn't rape her. He clearly had sex with her. But even with that, you know, even with that said, he put all speculation to bed. All right, he cheated. Let's move on. With this, there's still some mystery to exactly what happened that night. It's all been pure speculation. You know, his wife came after him with the golf club. You know, why, you know, why was he in his, you know, his night shoes? Why was he, what was he doing? How did he hit the, you know, how did he hit the fire hydrant? Was he drunk? He wasn't drunk. What, you know, what happened that caused him to hit a fire hydrant and damage his truck and caused him to, you know, get cuts and bruises on his face? I mean, that speculation is still, the mystery, there's still a great mystery on what happened that night. And to me, you know, if I'm helping Tiger Woods out, I'm saying, dude, just say what happened. Just go out there and say what happened. But he's not going to do that. And again, until he starts winning tournaments, this is something that will not go away anytime soon. Coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, who is better, Brady or Manning? We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about how Peyton Manning forever changed the New England Patriots. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 53 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, taking you to the top of the hour. Of course, you have the big showdown between Tom Brady, New England, and Indianapolis. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning going at it for their 12th time. Brady leads the series 7-4, but Manning's teams have won four out of the last five games, including four straight, going back to 2007. Excuse me, three straight, going back to 2007. And, you know, you look at a shift in this series that really turned this series into the favor of the Colts. And I understand they beat them in 2005, 2006. But then came 2007, 2006 season, AFC Championship. Colts are getting smacked around 21-6 in their home building, the then RCA Dome, and then all of a sudden Manning comes out there in the second half and just catches absolute fire. They scored 28 points second half points. They end up winning. They scored 32 second half points. They end up winning 38-34. They win the Super Bowl. And the Patriots go home with their tail between their legs. And after that, the Patriots go out, sign Wes Welker, sign Randy Moss, have the undefeated regular season, and then go on to, of course, lose to the Giants in the Super Bowl. You think about those Patriots teams compared to the Patriot team that we just saw before this year. It had been star-studded, you know, all these all-pros, all these former Pro Bowlers. You know, that's what Manning did to the Patriots. I mean, he forced Belichick to go out there and become more offensive-minded, you know, to become more, you know, conscious of the skill position, you know, Randy Moss and what have you. You know, but now the Patriots are getting back to what they once were, a team that's Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and a bunch of no-names, basically. Solid defense, more about the scheme, more about the sum of the parts, did anything, and the Patriots got away from that. Got away from that for about a good 2 years, especially in that Super Bowl year when they came up when they were the Super Bowl run up in 2007. That year they had nine All Pros on that team, nine All Pros, but no championship. Now you see the Patriots starting to get back to the kind of no name guys who execute to perfection. You know, the Danny Woodheads. They got Deion Branch back. They get rid of Randy Moss. Still have Wes Welker. You know, still have some, you know, Brandon Manware. Still have some talent. But now they kind of get in the way. They say, listen, Tom Brady's the face of the franchise. That's the only superstar that we need. But Peyton Manning was the reason for that upgrade in talent after that AFC championship. Belichick knew that he could no longer fool Peyton Manning, and that he would have to. He wasn't going to win games 20-3, okay, against Peyton Manning. That he was going to have to put some points on the board, and that to me had changed the way Patriots did things for about a good 2-3 year period. As far as the question of who's better, listen, I gave you the categories that I chose: talent, intangibles, game manager. Talent, I have to give, of course, the edge to Peyton Manning in terms of pure talent. When they drop back, throw the ball, there's nobody that's ever played this game that has more pure talent at the quarterback position than Peyton Manning. Intangibles is Tom Brady. Everything does not have to be perfect for Brady to succeed. Running game, receivers, he just knows how to make the right play at the right time. Game manager, to me, goes to Tom Brady. He is less likely to make a mistake in a big spot than Peyton Manning is, pure and simple. You know, Brady does not throw an interception to Tracy Porter for a touchdown when you're going for the game tying score. And he doesn't do it. It just would not happen with Tom Brady. And to me, that is the difference why I choose Brady over Manning. I trust Brady more in big spots than I do Peyton Manning. Let me be honest with you. Peyton Manning will have all the stats, they have all the numbers, but to me, it's like Elway and Marino. Marino has all the stats, all the numbers, no rings. Manning will have all the stats and all the numbers, but you'll look up, Brady will have 4 Super Bowls. Manning may get another one. But man, Manning will not win more Super Bowls than Tom Brady. Right now, it's 3-1, and I think that it will probably at worst end up 4-2. So I would give a slight edge to Tom Brady. Again, it's an argument, but a fair argument that can go either way. Have a good evening. Have a good day. I will see you tomorrow for Redskins postgame at 5:30. So long.